Go ahead, make my day.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tiny Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, Dirty Harry Ethics, Part 2. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Previously on Just a Minute, Timmy decided that she would pull the lever and let the train run over one person, and although she would scream and try to say it.
I would scream.
And I forgot to mention this when we were talking about this last time.
Yes.
But I saw a meme the other day,
and
I don't know if this is true or not, but you were talking about unrealistic, but it said that if you pull the lever at the exact moment that the front wheels are on one track, and then you pull it before the back wheels get to it, then it would safely derail the train and you would save everybody.
Well, that sounds like a technicality that's not in spirit with thinking through this philosophical problem.
Mm-hmm. So
I'd just be like, hey, Bob, get out of the way. Pull the lever.
So Tommy decided she would pull the lever.
Yes.
I described the ends justify the means thinking.
Did. Yes.
We both overviewed the plot of Dirty Harry.
Yes.
And then I asked you whether you thought Dirty Harry was a vigilante.
Yes.
And now the conclusion.
Dun, dun, dun.
So what did you come up with? What did you decide about Dirty Harry being a vigilante or not?
Dirty Harry is a vigilante.
Okay.
It doesn't matter that he was a cop, because even cops or any state actor can take the law into their own hands. As I am currently writing about in our book, there are many cases in more than one country of police and other state officials becoming part of a vigilante group or committee, and they do it for all of the same reasons that vigilantes get involved. So also, didn't he like throw his badge in the river?
Yeah, and that was like the very end of the movie. Like, that was the final scene. Like, I'm tossing away the trappings of all of these legal systems because they're not doing anything but tying my hands and getting in the way of true justice.
Right. And those are the same reasons that vigilantes take up. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And you will recall from our vigilante episode that most briefly, vigilantism is when people take the law into their own hands because the institutions, legal institutions, can't be trusted to be effective or efficient.
Right. And as I'm writing about right now, there's lots of countries that end up, you know, putting together these kinds of vigilante groups because they're just not getting safety and security from the state as part of their social contract.
Yeah, so you mentioned the fact that, you know, Dirty Harry is a police officer, is a cop, and there are, you know, some arguments that official actors of the law can't be vigilantes.
Right.
So particularly I'm thinking about, you know, one scholar who's, you know, from a criminological perspective said that vigilantism can't be a part of the, vigilantes can't be a part of the legal system or supported or endorsed by the legal system. So some would argue that Dirty Harry is not a vigilante because he's still acting with the authority of the law. He may be cutting corners. He may be using violence, but he's still doing his job. He's not out for personal revenge.
Kind of seems that way in some later films.
Well, actually, you know, the first film got some criticism for this. So actually, two of the sequels were about Dirty Harry stopping vigilantes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so
that's
the,
right. The vigilante cops themselves. There was a group of vigilante cops. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The sequel, Magnum Force, there's actually a group of cops who are murdering bad guys on their own, and Dirty Harry has to stop them. And then I think it's the fourth film.
Yes.
He actually has to try to track down a rape victim who's killing her, who's killing her rapist.
Yes.
So two of the sequels of Dirty Harry are actually about him trying to track down vigilantes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
But as you said, on the other hand, you know, many have argued that Dirty Harry is a vigilante and have called it, you know, legal vigilantism, public sector vigilantism, or police vigilantism.
Right.
And that's when public servants become frustrated with the system that they're working in, take the law into their own hands.
Yes.
So Dirty Harry works for the system, but he works outside of the system.
Right.
It's the idea that police have limited resources to fight crime. They're fed up with procedures, with legal rules and political correctness, and all of those just serve to protect criminals. So I have to, you know, discard all of that and do what's right.
Yes.
So final verdict for me, Dirty Harry is a vigilante.
Yes.
And for you.
For me, I stand by my initial answer, but yes, he is a vigilante. Also, vigilantes and police are ultimately both animated by this desire to monitor, surveil, and punish. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it just needs to be extra legal. Mm-hmm. So that's how we define vigilantism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Dirty Harry is a vigilante. And back to ethics, essentially, Dirty Harry ethics or Dirty Harry corruption is the notion that, like, the good cop, the good detective should color outside of the lines,
right?
Should do what's necessary to get the bad guy, and that police should be free to do as they please in order to stop crime.
Yes.
And this is also referred to as like noble cause corruption,
right,
or dirty hands corruption or dirty hairy corruption or ends justify the means. So we've got a lot of like names or words for this. So, you know, ultimately the idea is the means of violating people's rights is justified by the ends of fighting crime.
Correct.
So like torturing somebody to find the location of the kidnapped girl. And, you know, it's the idea also that violence and violating people's rights are justified as long as the bad guys punish, the innocent people are protected. And this is, you know, like a belief in the real world. This is not just about movies, but there are, you know, lots of people who, like, feel this way and talk about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of support for the Dirty Harry films. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of like represented.
Yeah, they're very popular, obviously.
He said it's okay to shoot as long as you shoot the right person.
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of his lines.
And I mean, it's a fun movie. Like, we love to, you know, watch like a badass deliver justice.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we think about Dirty Harry ethics, there are several major components here.
Oh, okay.
The ineffectiveness of the law.
Right.
The use of violence and the righteousness of the vigilante. So let me talk about these individually. So first of all, the ineffectiveness of the law. So advocates of Dirty Harry ethics emphasize order, have a preference for order over the law. So oftentimes we hear people use the phrase law and order to mean like tough on crime.
Yes.
But really it oftentimes refers to kind of like retributive notions of justice not constrained by the law. So usually the emphasis is much more on like order and control and punishment than it is on like the law and legal rules and legal procedures. So, you know, a Dirty Harry ethics approach would kind of eschew or reject procedural justice.
Sure.
And procedural justice is about the, you know, procedures, the process, the system being fair and just for determining outcomes.
Right. So you think we talked about like, this way, way back in Ocean Justice.
We talked about procedural justice?
We did.
Oh, I thought maybe this was like a new definition.
No.
But okay, we've talked about procedural justice
before. Go back and listen to Ocean
Justice. Right, but if we're applying procedural justice, Ocean Justice, that was a good episode. But if we're applying procedural justice to the criminal justice system, we might focus on the idea of due process as procedural justice, which is the general expectation of fair treatment in the system and the respective individual rights and protections against state authority. So, you know, we have things like an impartial trial by a jury. We have the right to confront witnesses against us. We have the right to legal representation. We have a protection against unwarranted searches and seizures.
Yes.
And all of these are rights that we are granted that are an attempt to make the system fair.
Right.
And particularly kind of balance out this fact that you have like the resources of a state against an individual.
Yes.
And a lot of times when people are talking about like due process and constitutional rights, there's an emphasis on protecting the innocent.
Right.
And certainly that's important. You've probably heard the old adage that it's better that 10 guilty people go free than one innocent person.
Well, don't ask students that now because they're fine with the opposite.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, okay, I don't even know how to comment on that other than say like, oh, protect the innocent. But anyway, oftentimes, you know, this perspective is argued from like the importance of protecting the innocent.
Right.
But it's also important, you know, for those who are guilty too. So it's important to have a fair system for determining guilt and punish even or especially for people who are guilty. So it's important for the system to be fair regardless of whether you're guilty or innocent.
Yes.
So going back to Dirty Harry, it's, you know, against the law. It's a violation of rights for Dirty Harry to, you know, like kick down someone's door, to search Scorpio's room without a warrant, to shoot a fleeing felon, to physically torture someone into confessing to a crime. So all of these are violations of individuals' rights, violations of procedural justice. And in the court system, we have things like, you know, Miranda and the exclusionary rule.
Right.
So the exclusionary rule says that evidence that's illegally obtained by the police can't be used against you in court. So if the police search when they shouldn't, they can't use that evidence against you to get a conviction.
Yes.
Miranda, everybody's probably familiar with the Miranda rulings. You have the right to an attorney.
Yes.
You have the right to remain silent.
Yes.
And you have the right.
You cannot afford one. One will be
I got those backwards. Anyway, obviously, need to
we
brush
can remember the credits
Miranda.
For podcasts, mm-hmm. though. The like criminal.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We can always remember that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Miranda warnings are,
right.
you know, particularly a protection against custodial questioning. So if the police coerce a confession from you or use illegal means to get a confession against you, out of you, then that can't be used in court.
Right.
So you don't have to talk to the police. And if the police, like, beat you up and coerce you into confessing, then they can't use that against you.
Yes.
So in Dirty Harry, Scorpio is released because of Miranda and the exclusionary rule. So Harry, you know, tortured him. He searched, you know, and all this evidence he found illegally. So
and that definitely reflected how people felt about criminals get to go free, like on technical violations all the time, like that this is common.
Right. And especially in 1971, Miranda was like particularly controversial.
Yes.
So, you know, in the 1960s, the Supreme Court under the, you know, Chief Justice Warren expanded a lot of due process protections.
Right.
So like the exclusionary rule, Matt v. Ohio, that was applied to the states. The Miranda decision came down. And like I said, that was particularly controversial. And, you know, the public saw it as like coddling criminals and handcuffing the police.
Yes.
And so, you know, there's a scene in Dirty Harry where you know, like the prosecutor saying, okay, we're not going to charge Scorpio and we're going to let him go. And, you know, Dirty Harry's like, oh, I'm all broken up about this man's rights. And, you know, like the law is crazy if it lets this guy go.
Yeah.
And of course it is, because then he goes out and hijacks a school bus full of kids.
Yes.
So ultimately, if you're a Dirty Harry ethics kind of guy, you would be likely to think that legal protections for the accused aren't necessary,
right.
that they tie the police's hands, that they serve to protect criminals.
Yes.
And as we said before, ultimately, the film ends with Harry throwing his badge into the river, demonstrating that the law in the legal system only constrains justice.
Yes.
So the ineffectiveness of the law...
Was one.
Yeah. Number two is violence. So the best way for police to deal with criminals is through violence. Violence and killing is necessary because of how dangerous these people are, especially to like the nice, sweet, innocent, wonderful, law-abiding citizen.
Yeah.
And, you know, vigilante films in particular capitalize upon our fear of victimization by strangers. So we didn't really talk about this aspect of it, but like Scorpio, what he does is he's basically a sniper. So it's like these innocent people, like I think the first scene is like a woman swimming in a swimming pool at her house, and he's like on a roof across the street and just like shoots her. I think he shoots a priest. So there's like four or five people that he's like, you know, like just looking through a scope, and they don't even see it coming, and then they're killed by this serial killer.
Yeah.
So it really capitalizes on this fear of like unpredictable violence by stranger. And of course, we've talked before about how stranger victimization is quite rare.
Yes.
And also, these films frequently set up this extreme argument of like the most evil of bad guys.
Right.
Again, see what the law does. All of these protections just let bad guys go free who hijack school buses and beat up little kids.
Yes.
And there was another film that I was reading about, which I actually had not heard of before or seen.
Yeah.
But it's called Star Chamber, and I think it was like released in 1983. And Michael Douglas is a judge.
Oh, okay.
And he basically turns into a vigilante judge because he's like setting all of these like people free.
Okay.
So there's apparently this one scene where he's talking to another judge and he's like expressing his frustration about having to let people go on technicalities. And the other judge says something like, you know, well, I have to set guys free every week who go out and rape entire school districts.
What?
Yeah. And then the other people that he like sets free on a technicality, another serial killer who's killing.
Of course.
He's killing the elderly for like their insurance benefits.
Oh,
so
geez.
He gets to go free.
Yeah.
And then another person is this guy who's like kidnapping all of these boys and using them to produce pornography.
There's never been a case of an entire school district being raped, by the way.
I'm certain. But like that's the kind of images that these movies set up, that the law is setting like these super dangerous serial killers for you to go out and prey on, innocent people.
Yes.
And that the best way to deal with those people is extra legal violence.
Yeah.
Let Dirty
Vigilante
Harry,
violence.
Put them down. Go ahead. Make my day.
Punk.
Right. And then finally, it's the idea of righteousness. So ineffectiveness of the law.
Yes.
Violence is necessary. And particularly the, the vigilante or the police, Dirty Harry, is right. Don't question him.
Yeah.
He doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
He always does what's right. He knows what's right. And he always does it. He doesn't use his brutality on the innocent, only the guilty. So, it's the notion that when police go too far, they aren't hurting the innocent. They're actually protecting them.
Yeah.
So, it's this idea like the media and academics are out of touch. Police administrators are concerned about political correctness and liability. The courts are concerned about technicalities protecting guilty criminals. But the police are the heroes who know what need to be done and who do it. So we should just let them do their job of catching bad guys and fighting crime.
Yeah. Absolutely not. So, for the group that holds like the monopoly on violence, the state gives them that power. They can beat you and legally shoot you. We should hold them to a higher standard. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more in a future episode when we talk more about policing.
Yeah. But this is kind of an aside, a comment, police are public servants. They're supposed to serve the public and be accountable to the public.
Yeah. So someone might say, Dirty Harry, it's just a movie. Why do we care? Why do we name a whole issue or problem after it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's important to recognize that, the attitudes or assumptions underlying the notion of Dirty Harry ethics, that the police should have more freedom and power to fight bad guys. That's certainly a major theme of most of the, police shows and most of the police movies, but it's not just in movies. Like I said, real people kind of take these messages away from these films, might think like this. And it might affect their, thinking they're under the influence of these myths and stereotypes from media without kind of realizing how much that might be affecting their thinking about crime and criminal justice.
Yeah, for sure.
And, we've talked about that notion before, but that idea that guilty people are walking free out of the courthouse every day on technicalities is about as far from the truth of criminal justice as it gets. That's just not...
Yeah.
That's just not the case. Yeah. Even for minor crimes, like once, once the system gets its claws into you, you don't get free. You don't get away from that. It's really difficult.
You're done. Done. Yeah.
And especially the notion that like school bus hijackers and pedophiles are being set free all the time is that's obviously a scary idea. And if that were true, that would be kind of like scary and outrageous. Right.
Yeah, for sure. We don't want school bus hijackers out running around. But also remember from our victimization episode how rare these things are. Stranger victimization, rare. Serial killers, very rare. And school bus hijackers are also rare.
Yeah, and especially like the two combined, like serial killer hijacking a school bus full of kids. Like, has that ever really happened? I don't think so.
Well, actually.
Oh, no. It has.
I just watched a documentary called Chowchilla. So there was a school bus hijacking in 1976. Three hijackers abducted the driver and 26 children ages 5 to 14 and imprisoned them in a truck trailer that they buried in a quarry in California.
Oh my gosh.
The kids and the bus driver managed to escape before the kidnappers could issue their ransom demands. And all victims survived, but they tragically suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder of being buried alive and left to die because they were like no water, no bathroom, very little air. But alas, it was no serial killer.
Well,
so yeah, so serial killer, school bus hijacking, no. School bus hijacking, yes.
Well, that has happened at least once.
At least once. So it turns out the instead of a serial killer, it was three men who were caught, convicted, and sentenced to life without parole. But that got overturned on appeal. On the finding of bodily harm. So there was a lot of research actually on these children afterward, because that's when we learned about long-term psychological trauma, and that wasn't included in the harm factor. So actually all three of the kidnappers were eventually paroled. One of them, he stated later that despite coming from wealthy families, because they were all rich, they all came from wealthy families.
The kidnappers?
Yes. He said that they were deeply in debt. And they pick children because children are precious and the state would be willing to pay ransom for them, and they don't fight back. They're vulnerable. So that's like the one nightmare scenario.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But that
is
extremely rare, right? Like the fact is this is an incident that actually happened, not by a serial killer, but you know, people bring these cases to mind when they're thinking about the killers that go free, because all three of these guys were eventually paroled.
Do you know how long they were in prison before they were paroled?
Like one was 70 when he was released. So I think two were released in their 60s and one was, the last one was released in at 70. But he was running businesses the whole time he was in prison. A gold mining operation, and like he was running businesses the whole time. And he's still rich. Like, he has a trust fund. And so when he was released, like, the survivors actually sued and got money from his trust fund. And they said it basically paid for some of their therapy, but wasn't enough to buy a house.
All that gold he dug up while he was in prison went straight to the, to the victims.
Before we move on here, just one other cool thing is that this is how they learned that when people are isolated, that they will begin to hallucinate from trauma, because the children reported seeing all kinds of stuff that wasn't there.
And how long were the kids locked up?
Like, not very long, but I want to say it was more than a day. Like, it was definitely more than 24 hours because they couldn't locate the bus. And they had purposely buried them below the ground, so they weren't able to see. But they ended up getting out, you know, fortunately. But yeah, so it was the, you know, kind of hallucinations that manifest when you're isolated like that. Yeah, it was a really horrible incident.
Sounds awful.
But so rare, not common at all.
Yeah, again, so excluding the one example of school bus kids getting hijacked, you know, I think that overall this has kind of been one of the major themes of our entire podcast, our entire show, kind of understanding the way that media and pop culture affects the way that we think about crime and criminal justice. We even mentioned that in our first episode on, like, what is criminology? We had an episode on the ethics of true crime. We talked about it in, you know, serial killers and victimization. So it's been a theme of our, in a lot of our shows. And it's important to recognize the way that, you know, pop culture may influence cultural attitudes or reflect cultural attitudes, like what ordinary people think and believe. You know, for example, studies have shown that watching TV, and particularly watching crime TV, is associated with fear of crime. So people who watch more crime shows are more afraid of crime, are more likely to support the police, more likely to have trust in the police, more likely to support harsh punishment like capital punishment, more likely to support gun ownership, and even more likely to own a gun themselves. So when talking about Dirty Harry ethics, you know, film and TV frequently comes down on the side of allowing police to violate the law, to violate people's rights in order to get the bad guy. You know, with Dirty Harry, like, harassment, violence, torture, dishonesty, killing, all of these things are good, valuable things in order to get at the end goal of fighting street crime. So do you have anything else you want to say about the impact of pop culture, media, or Dirty Harry ethics?
I think we'll save it for another episode.
Great. Well, that means then that it's our Minute to Spin It, where we both give our takeaway from today's show. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
While he was doing lines and crossing all of mine, someone told his white-collar crimes to the FBI. And I don't dress for villains or for innocence. I'm on my vigilante bleep Again. That was the Taylor Swift song I was telling you about earlier today called Vigilante Bleep.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a clean podcast, so we're not going to say the actual word. So that's line. Those are lines from that song.
Yeah, Taylor Swift,
Vigilante. That's not really my spin, though. It's rather a warning because, you know, this sort of this idea that we coddle criminals and, you know, blaming the victim and that we should just be able to do what we want to with criminals leads us down a very dark path. I think that sums it up.
Yep.
What's your spin?
Go ahead, make my day. So I'm not sure whether it's that or do you feel lucky punk?
Yeah,
is Dirty Harry's most iconic line, but it's one of those two.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, go ahead, make my day. That even I think Ronald Reagan even like used that.
He did.
But go ahead, make my day is from the fourth film, Sudden Impact, and it's basically a just like a different version of the Do You Feel Lucky Punk. Yes. Except instead of a hot dog, it's like coffee in a diner. So, you know, in this scene, like a gang of thugs are robbing a diner.
Oh, okay.
And they've all got hostages.
Yes.
And, you know, Dirty Harry walks in and, you know, sees what's going on. And, you know, like he's having a conversation with one of the criminals. And, you know, Harry says, "We aren't just going to let you get away with this." And the criminal's like, "Who are you talking about?" And he's like, "Smith, Wesson, and me." And then he just, like, starts shooting them. Like, I mean, he just, like, they've all got hostages. And he just starts.
Doesn't care. Mm.
It's like that Danny DeVito meme where he's got, like, the two pistols. And it says, like, "So anyway, I started blasting." So you know, just like in this diner full of customers.
Collateral damage.
Just starts blasting, which that's a hilarious meme, by the way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like, I think it's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I think it actually was a gun control episode. And it's like Danny DeVito sitting in a chair and he's got two pistols.
Oh,
and basically, so he says something like, "So anyway, I started blasting, but my two favorite ones, one is the first one says like, when a girl touches my thigh." So anyway, I started blasting. And then my other favorite, and this is awful. Like, this is really bad.
This is a clean podcast.
Well, I mean, the idea is bad, so there's no filthy language. Okay. But the other one, it says like, you know, "So anyway, I started blasting," and that's Alec Baldwin when the director yelled cut.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it's so bad, but it's
that
sorry.
Bad.
I couldn't help but laugh at that.
We're awful.
But anyway, procedural justice and due process are important, both to protect the innocent and the guilty.
Right.
So even if you've committed a crime, you deserve a fair trial, and we have a responsibility to respect your rights, even if that makes the police's job harder. The ends do not justify unethical, immoral means.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Library's very own Jenna Polk and Zach Williams. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.